to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my very special guests, Kevin and Barbara Sisti. Kevin, Barbara, it's good to have you back, and I'm drinking my machine gun coffee so that I can be energized for this, but it actually, the machine guns might, I don't know, in a strange way, relate to our subject matter.
Sadly, yes.
I think they will.
It might. You guys don't know this, but I have been, as I mentioned right before we started recording, I've been pumping recordings out because in the holiday months, I get all kinds of cancellations. So I'm doing a few of them myself, but I'm diving deeper into trying to put together some of the research that I have done into the background. I'm trying to dig and see more, get more insight into the creation of Latter Rain, because I, based on the trails of history that I'm going back to the birth of Latter Rain, I'm seeing all of these ministries covering up their past. And I've got this thing inside me that says, okay, if you're covering up, I want to know what it is. What in the world are you covering up? Well, the deeper I go, the darker it gets and the more sinister. And long story short, I have started to combine more of my research into the podcast I'm doing myself. This one that we're recording now will probably air in January, so the things I'm talking about, I think, will come out before this. But Gordon Lindsay, he and William Branham, as we've mentioned, they created this platform for creating Hero Worship, The Voice of Healing, with magazine, which turned into The Voice of Healing Revivals. It spawned off the, well, it came on the heels of Latter Rain, but for a period of time, it was spawning off new Latter Rain ministries. And Oral Roberts was part of this. T.L. Osborne, Word of Faith guy, was an editor in it. Branham, obviously, was spearheading it. And I'm diving deeper into Gordon Lindsay, and I'm finding things that are just really sketchy. Gordon Lindsay was a he was a Foursquare minister, Amy Simple McPherson's church, left the ministry. His district was right adjacent to North Battleford, where all of this originated. Well, there was a period of time he left his ministry to start publishing books on Christian identity, and that was in mid-40s, I think, maybe 1940. Fast forward to when Latter Rain was birthed, after it started sweeping through the nation, he started publishing Christian nationalism ideas and Christian identity ideas in Voice of Healing, but you can't tell it. If you just simply read it, you can't tell it. But one of the charts, and I go through this in one of the podcasts that I did, he's got these charts of when the, basically he's implying that the doomsday is going to come, and he will say things like, it's a decision point in 1948. Well, when you read that in today's world, you're thinking, okay, well, 1948's come and gone. There's no really value in this. But if you go back and you look at the timeline of Christian identity and Christian nationalism, Gerald L.K. Smith, who is a leader of the California Klan, working with Wesley Swift as his right-hand man, the most notorious Christian identity leader in the nation, they had created a political platform of Christian nationalism, and they were running in the years that for these timelines. So Gordon Lindsay is saying, we have a decision point, and oh, by the way, here's this Christian nationalist guy. And then he's saying phrases in his timelines that are in full alignment with Christian nationalism and Christian identity. And he gives these terms like ages. We had the age of the New Deal. And he's referring to all of the Christian nationalist, Christian identity people were strongly against Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the New Deal. They called it the Jew Deal, which is offensive. But anyway, all of this was birthed on the heels of the Christian identity movement turning racist and turning very, very militant. And we start to see in the timeline, if you align them up, you're starting to see people becoming weaponized in these movements, which leads us to our conversation today.
Exactly. And I think we were just talking about machine gun coffee, or there it is. Okay.
Well, and interesting with what you've been studying with 1948, Israel becomes a nation. There's so many things.
Yeah. And it seems to all head back to the Latter Rain. And even what we're going to talk about today, a lot of Word of Faith, which has come out of it. And but to get to the point, we're talking about a ministry out of Woodland Park, Colorado. It's Andrew Womack Ministries International and Charis Bible College. And Barb happened to grow up in Woodland Park and knows a lot about the town growing up there, a tiny little town right next to Pikes Peak in Colorado. And we have this this man and a movement, Andrew Womack, who appears to be a humble grandfather type figure, just really calm and all that in his appearance when he's on the platform. But almost a maniacal takeover is in place of the town of Woodland Park itself as kind of a prototype of what he wants to do to take over the nation, to take over the world, which is really a dominionist agenda. And I'll pass this over to Barb in a second, but I wanted to read just an excerpt from an article that was written in 2021, May of 2021. And the title of the article is Andrew Womack Urges Followers to Take Over Colorado City. So in 2014, Andrew Womack moved his ministry from Colorado Springs to the nearby city of Woodland Park to launch Charis Bible College. Now he would like his followers to run the city and the surrounding Teller County. Man, as many people as we have here in the school board or in the school here, we ought to take over Woodland Park, said Womack during an April Citizens Academy that was hosted by the 501c4 political organization he founded in 2017, Truth and Liberty Coalition. Remember that. And that was designed to help believers get involved in politics. The county ought to be totally dominated by believers. Now, the interesting thing about this is I was looking this up.
That's a quote from him.
Yeah, that was a quote from him. The Truth and Liberty Coalition this year had a conference September 11 through 13 at Charis Bible College. And the speakers that were scheduled for this event were Andrew Womack, a pastor from Detroit named Lorenzo Sewell, and Charlie Kirk, who was murdered the day before. But this is the crowd. This is the Lance Wallnau crowd, the Seven Mountains crowd. Combine word of faith with positive confession, faith as a force, guaranteed health and wealth, all the things, dominion nationalism and really Christian supremacy at an extreme, extreme level. So with that, I'd like to pass it over to you, Barb, because you grew up in this town and, you know, far different town before 2014.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had family in that area for over 52 years. And we, you know, it was a small, sleepy town of a couple thousand when I grew up. It's almost 10 or so now. But I think one of the things that has been alarming to me is just the duplicity with which he's come into the town. Obviously, it's, you know, there's lots of churches in the town, different denominations, all the things that you would expect. And growing up there, it's one of those towns where people, you know, as a kid, I always used to say it, and especially in high school, people know what you did before you did it. So everybody kind of knew everybody. There was one high school, there was one grocery store, you know, a couple banks eventually. You know, I remember the big thing was when we got McDonald's my junior year in high school, because we didn't really have fast food and everything was at Pizza Hut because that was our big fancy restaurant. So every like school cast party, baseball win celebration, every kind of thing was at Pizza Hut. And so obviously people grow and towns evolve. Where I get concerned about this, and it's, this is what's weird as someone who professes Christ as a Christian. Colorado Springs became a hotbed of ministries because the Colorado government changed the law for 501c3s and they got a big tax break. So a lot of people moved their ministries into Colorado Springs. And I just remember when I was a kid, it was a big issue and there was some drama because when Dobson put up his Focus on the Family, he put it where in a big swath where there was an elk migration path and people were trying to protest the Focus on the Family where he was putting it because at that time there was nothing out there. But what's interesting is you would think a town that is, I would say, mostly pretty conservative, very Christian, would be excited about having a Bible college. And, you know, but what's happened is when he moved up there, it's turned into kind of a takeover. And he says things like taking over the town. He says things like it's a prototype city. They're doing 11 in the state of Colorado as prototypes on how to take over the political environment unto, he calls it Christianity, but it looks like Christian supremacy to me. And it does can't coexist with democracy as democracy is defined by our government, which is really interesting. And so what some of the fallout, John, has been that's really been alarming is people that I've known my whole life that I've been witnessing to and sharing the gospel with. Some know Jesus and some still are, you know, I'm still talking to. Now we're going, wait a second, maybe I'm not a Christian. If this guy is Christian, if this is what Christ looks like, then maybe I'm not a Christian. And so they're wondering about leaving their churches. Then I have a whole new group that are like, well, if this is what God is. Because basically they took over the school board. 70% of the teachers were forced out. There's been businesses there. We're going to probably eventually in our podcast, we have several people that have run businesses there. One has been a ranch and a children's camp since 1946. These are people that have been in the area that have built ranchers that have lived there. Their families have lived there for generations. And he's coming in professing to be a Christian, but doing things in the darkest, most evil way. And it's this bait and switch thing where it's supposedly of Jesus, except for it's not a servant heart. It's not coming in the fruit of the Spirit. It's not about even evangelizing the people in the town that don't know Jesus. It's about bringing in the brethren who basically live at poverty level. Several of them live in their vehicles. There's in my parents' neighborhood, they have houses where it's basically like 20 people that are Wamek brethren live in the house because they've been told to give everything to the ministry. So they have to all kind of be in these like commune houses in neighborhoods. It's really sad because a lot of the followers, they preach the prosperity word of faith thing, but the followers have to live in poverty because they're supposed to give everything to the ministry. Meanwhile, Wamek's got like a 45-acre ranch in an adjacent little town. And apparently the compound for the Charis Bible College is like billions. I can't even remember. We'll have to look and get the real figures. But they're very excited about how much money they have to build. And it's just been alarming the way they're trying to take over things.
There's so much to unpack there, and you brought back so many memories that I had growing up. I've mentioned before, I grew up everywhere between Arizona and South Carolina, moving from place to place. I spent a large part of my time in Kansas, but went to church near in the Ozark Mountains in this little town in Missouri. And everybody in the town of Missouri lived kind of like you said. There was a Pizza Hut, and that was the place where we all went because that was literally there was no restaurant in the town where the church was, but we would drive to the nearest town, which had a Pizza Hut, and that's where we ate almost every Sunday. And I can't tell you how many pizzas I've had. they had a buffet. Anyway, it was a good memory. I could go off in a tangent, and I'll try not to. But the people of the church would go to this Passion Play, where there was this big, massive statue of Jesus that was called Christ of the Ozarks. And when you're in the movement, and you're especially as a teenager, you don't know all of the sinister stuff under the hood. You look at it and you think it's just a bunch of kids, they're worshiping Jesus, and they're going to see a passion play about the Christ. Nobody told us that the statue erected in the play was directed, the whole thing was established by one of the most notorious leaders in Christian identity. And only after working with Charles, as I'm piecing all this together, I start to realize, wait a minute, the town where this church was, which seemed like a simple, humble church, was right in the heart of the mess where all of the Christian identity people just came and went to hide, right? Mm-hmm. And it's all connected to the things that we're talking about. Charles mentioned in his research that his church, whenever they would talk about the coming end of days, they knew where all the weapons were whenever the war came. And that's one of the themes that they're not going to tell you from behind the pulpit. There's this coming war. In Christian identity, it's a race war. It's the William Branham said specifically, blacks and whites will rise up and fight again, and something like the blacks will die. Like the, I can't remember how he said it. I don't want to misquote. But it is a theme of a coming race war as part of the end of days theology. I did not realize any of this when I was in the church, and now that I'm researching identity, racism, clan, all of these things, there are multiple facets and components to it, but one of them is just simply this. You go to a church, and it may seem like a normal church. It might be Baptist, might be Pentecostal, and all of the brethren, who are some of them deacons, they're just humble, simple men. And during the daylight, everything's fine and they're happy and you would never suspect it. And at night, under the cover of darkness, they're doing all of the things that you read about in the newspapers whenever it goes wrong. And you're mentioning places that right before I called you for this podcast, right before we connected, I was talking to another person and their family is from the area that you're talking about. So there is a Branhamite concentration right there where you're talking about. Now, I'm not saying Womack is connected to Branhamism, but in weird ways, he is connected to what I mentioned earlier, Gordon Lindsay and Christ for the Nations. In fact, as you were talking, I had to pull it up to refresh my memory, but he mentions right on his website that he and his wife went to hear a conference in 1972 at Christ for the Nations Institute. That is the school that Gordon Lindsay founded. It was a result of Lindsay and Branham. And it's interesting because, like I said before, all of these people are hiding their past. Nowhere have I found yet to date where he mentions who was the speaker, but he gives great reverence to the speaker that changed his life at Christ for the Nations and taught him the word of faith. Now, there have been numerous ministers connected to Christ for the Nations, some of them sinister characters in our history. If I remember correctly, Hobart Freeman was attending the conferences during that time, and Hobart Freeman led his entire cult into massive destruction. We talk about that every Tuesday with Chino. But there's been some very notorious sinister people in Christ for the Nations, and Womack refuses, from all appearances, he refuses to tell him who taught him the word of faith. He just says, I went to Christ for the Nations for it. So here's Andrew Womack teaching the Christian identity and apparently the militant version of it and Christian nationalism, and he got his inspiration from the very heart of what I'm researching.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's clear also that he's been under Kenneth Copeland. And I watched a video one day, this was a couple of years ago, but where Kenneth Copeland was actually anointing Andrew Womack. And Andrew Womack has admitted the fact that Kenneth Copeland has been a mentor in his life. And so when you consider the extremes of Kenneth Copeland doctrine, little gods and just the faith in faith and all of these things,
Kenneth Copeland's grandson,
well, right down the street there's a church at the entrance of town called Legacy Church, which is Kenneth Copeland's grandson. And interesting about that church, there was a situation where he was actually just polling the congregation, not polling them, but asking the congregation for money so that he can buy a private jet, like his grandfather. So crazy, crazy word of faith stuff.
Yeah, but. And I think that's, and even... you know, when you're talking, John, I'm thinking about the connections. And one of the things that we had met with a reporter a while ago who did a several-part story on Womack and the compound. And so he kind of gave us some information and we did some research. But one of the things that I think Kevin knows more about than me, but Andrew stepped out of Karis and has his Truth and Liberty thing, which is some other name, but it's, so Karis has been handed over the Bible College, so they're training people up, but it's still on the same property.
It's interesting that Andrew stepped out of Keras right as these articles went out by the Colorado Times Reporter, exposing what had been happening up there at the secret Bible College.
Well, and what is interesting, there's so many things, but one of the notable things is the person that he put in charge of Keras now was a former...
I'll get into that.
Yeah, go into
there's,
that.
There was something in Pennsylvania, it was back in the 90s, called the Narrow Gate Cult. And basically it was an authoritarian type cult that started actually at Messiah College in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. But there were teachings in that group that were largely based on Andrew Womack's teachings. And so this particular man led this cult for about 4 years, authoritarian, sexual deviancy, all kinds of crazy stuff, where actually in the end his wife and his child ended up leaving in the middle of the night, all based on Andrew Womack's teachings. Now, the interesting thing about this is, fast forward from the 90s to 2000, I believe it's 19, and the man who was inspired by Andrew Womack and teaching that destructive doctrine in this cult is now Andrew Womack Ministries International Senior Vice President. This very man that created this cult has been hired by Andrew Womack.
I think he was prosecuted in the state of Pennsylvania.
Ministries and Keras Bible College. So this is the destructive nature. And so what we're looking at, we want to expose this stuff to warn, because we see all the kids, like when we're in town, you know, that are hanging out at Starbucks or the coffee shops, and they've got their Bibles, but they don't understand the theology necessarily behind it, how destructive it is, and how anti-Christian it is, especially when you look at the idea of the little gods doctrine.
Right. And it's been interesting. I just have to put my Bible on the table at a Starbucks in the town, the one that is there now. And the brethren will come, and they come over and they say, "Are you a brethren?" Brother Womack is what they call him. And they're the brethren of Brother Womack. And it's, I've met some amazingly delightful people. And they just seem to be all in, and they're trying to run after the Lord. And then there's a part in the conversation where I don't know how to explain it, but it's like this glaze eye look comes over, and it goes from, "We're just telling your stories," to like, I don't know what it is, but it's not the Lord. And you start to hear the giving up everything. We sold everything. We used to live here. And again, I don't, whatever people choose to do to follow the Lord, but I really wonder, when you have health and wealth and prosperity, word of faith being preached from the pulpit by people who are living in very big houses, driving very fancy cars, and then everyone that serves them is poor as dirt. And some of the people are living in their cars. I mean, there's been horrific stories. It's been a town council. They're trying to get on the council of the city, and the city finally has woken up to what's going on. But there's been issues with people like living in their cars, and because they're trying to be near the compound, and there's not the accommodations for all the influx of people that came in. And also they don't have money. And things like
8,000 feet in elevation, it's not the greatest thing to be living in your car in the winter.
Yeah, it's more like 9,000.
And part of the problem.
Well, and I think one of the other issues is they keep making promises to the city because they're a 501c3 and C4, they're tax exempt. So all these people are now coming in. They have this massive compound. They're using city water, city, you know, police, city, everything. And the problem is they're not paying taxes. So they built up these new dorms, and they were like, we're going to pay taxes on the dorms because it's going to take more from the city. And then they reneged on it and got a lawyer team and said, we've decided we're not going to. And what are you going to do? So it's just really disingenuous. It's not the Lord. It's not what Jesus calls us to be, servants of light and truth. And
no, and that's one of the reasons why we want to speak too. It's right. Because of the people that we know there and elsewhere, that this is not Jesus. This is not the Jesus of the Bible. This is something altogether different that we're seeing, and we're seeing in a lot of different places now.
It is widespread, and it's very troubling. You probably don't know this. It has just now kind of kicked off, and in fact, I think this Thursday may be the first one where it's actually a podcast series. But I've been doing a podcast. I started a podcast series with a lady who was in youth with a mission, who had gone on outreach programs, and escaped it after a horrendous story. She gave me her story on one of our Fridays, our stories on Friday, and she became a licensed counselor, and she helps training. She has a ministry training and helping people who are disconnecting or disassociating, a lot of body somatic training. Anyway, we are unpacking Youth with a Mission because this is very concerning to me. I haven't yet came to the point where I'm ready to say whether or not it's a destructive cult, but there are so many signs and similarities that you have to just say, well, that's a red warning flag. This is very dangerous what is happening. And some of the stories she's telling me, it's just like, oh my gosh, man, that right. I can't imagine letting children, youth, being involved in something like this when it's so potential for a disaster. So we're unpacking that. And I was trying to remember why have I been researching Andrew Womack? And so while you were talking, I was digging through all my notes, and I found it. The Charis Ministries, they actually, a lot of the students went alongside of the Youth with a Mission missionaries, and they would have, you know, they'd meet in coffee shops. It wasn't, I don't think they were the same bases, but there's this weird, the mission doesn't seem to be about the mission they're describing, which is another part of the story that's making me want to dig deeper. There seems to be something else going on. And you see the Youth with a Mission going into a place. Well, right alongside it, you see missionaries that are involved with Charis Bible College. And you have to wonder, well, do you need both sets of missionaries? What's going on here? It doesn't make any sense. If you're going to convert the people and you're converting them to Jesus Christ, and you have two ministries that are very much aligned with each other, they're running in parallel, not in opposition, why do you need both bases? So, not to give too many secrets, because we're going to be unpacking that as we go forward with Youth in a Mission. I came across it because of this, and this was like a rabbit trail that never ends. When you start digging in this, now I'm bringing back memories of research that I had in the 60s where people were literally going into lockdown as militant extremists, and you wonder, is this the precursor to that? And I'm not qualified to say, but it looks very bad what's happening.
I mean, we have our own stories with YWAM, so that's a whole other.
How about how close the YWAM base is in Colorado Springs?
There is a YWAM base in Colorado Springs.
A half hour away.
Not that far. And
further.
And then the one where the shooting was is just up the road towards Denver a little bit. I do think there's some major red flags with YWAM. I think there's a lot of the bases, even just traveling overseas as I have, I've run into people in country, and my takeaway has always been, it's alarming to me how young they are and how unequipped they are for what they're in charge of, when I've been in other countries, seeing them trying to lead stuff. And we have come across, even just when we were living in the desert, working with people living full time in their vans and in tents, we've come across a lot of kids that were former YWAMers that are now like living in their cars because they're so disillusioned, they're so burnt out. They were put in charge of things they had no business being in charge of, and now think, you know, hate God, hate Jesus, hate the ministries. And we found ourselves multiple times talking to kids in their late 20s, early 30s, or turned to drugs. And again, once or twice that happens, it's like, okay. But we have seen enough now over the years that we have actually kind of had some conversations about what's really going on, because the fruit And there's so much, even with the family book with Jeff Charlotte, just about some of these organizations being a front for something else that has to do with government, or with, you know, even changing the governmental leaders in different countries. It's really alarming because Jesus seems to be nowhere to be found. He's more a vehicle to get somebody in a country to do another nefarious thing. And I don't know to the degree that is, but it's definitely happening enough that it's scary.
And I think with the roots of YWAM, with Lauren Cunningham and the Seven Mountain Mandate, although it was less militant. Yeah, the Burning Heart Group, Bill Bright, names like this, as we go back and look at it, I think there's definitely some concerns with the YWAM group and really more of a Dominion agenda.
Absolutely.
With the entire group that's not even central. It's really a decentralized type of organization, right?
Right. I think that at some point, and John probably knows more about this, people started to recognize that there were certain buzzwords that you probably shouldn't say publicly if people you wanted your ministry to survive, especially after the William Branham stuff and the Jim Jones stuff. So it's really interesting to me. I think that's part of the reason we got duped at IHOP, because we didn't know the language. And so when we started hearing things, and I'm like, okay, that kind of fits, or that's a new idea on that passage.
On us. That's what they did.
That's a different spin on that passage, but okay, I'm open to what God might be doing. And then you're like, but I don't think he's doing that. And so I think it's interesting. So these guys, it just seems like there's so many of them. We were kind of tongue in cheek, we've been having conversations with Chris Berglund, who does the Dreaming for Lou Engle, and he's been pushing back
comments on
YouTube. Yeah. But one of the things that I told Kevin I respect about him is at least he says on his website that he's about manifest sons of God. I'm like, you know, I don't agree with it. I think it's heresy, but at least he's not trying to do the bait and switch. It's not that when it really, it absolutely is that. So, you know, for that, at least he's being honest.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. It took me a long time after leaving to realize that there were reasons why things were not as they appeared. Mm-hmm. And the deeper I dug, you know, when I first discovered the connection between the Klan and all of this, I thought, well, the Klan must be the agenda. But I'm starting to understand the Klan was just the vehicle. There was a bigger, larger agenda, because you see multiple players who aren't really aligned with each other coming into the revivals, and you might attend a revival, and here's this guy from the FBI who's sitting in this corner undercover. Here's this guy from the Klan. Here's this guy from Germany. And you start to look at it, and you think, well, what is this? This doesn't really seem like religion. And you mentioned the family, which it starts me thinking down those pathways, and I'd really try to contain myself, because you could very easily get branded as a conspiracy theorist. But I will say factually, I can say these things factually, William Branham's campaign manager was the Baron William T. Frary von Blumberg, who was the direct adopted cousin of Hitler's Minister of Defense, Werner von Blumberg. And he was a director in the family. So you're talking about the family. This is one of the big guys, right? He sponsored William Branham's tours all over. He and Paul Kane and William Branham went into Germany. And during that time in Germany, they set up a foundation that literally established the and kickstarted the ministry of Paul Schaefer, who went to Chile, founded Colonia Dignidad. And this was the colony wherein all the Nazis escaped into the colony, into Argentina. Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't talked about it much. I don't want to go too far, because the moment you edge into current events and current things happening, that's whenever you start to see weird things in your technology and weird people in black vans following you, which I have had. But I can talk about historically, there were places in Branhamism, some places in Canada I'm familiar with, different various places, where there was this large concentration of migrants from Germany. And mm-hmm. When I saw this, as younger, I thought, well, this is just unusual. But now you understand declassified documents like Operation Paperclip, where they were taking the most important minds in Germany and divvying them up among all of the people who, all of the nations who had conquered Germany, some of them coming to the United States, some in Argentina, etc. And you look at it and you're just scratching your head thinking, wait a minute. And you start to wonder, was this really religious? And one of the other things that is coming out in a podcast that it's not out yet while we're talking, I had come across some FBI declassified documents that was trying to determine, was the Baron William T. Freire von Blumberg a spy? And I started looking at it, and they're trailing him because he is under the guise of this religious ministry, but he's doing things that you just don't do as a religious minister. He's having escorts into his hotel room, male escorts into his hotel rooms. And I'm thinking, you know, I talked with Paul Kane, and he mentioned that Germany trip. And he said in that Germany trip, Branham was never allowed back. And at the time, I'm thinking, well, maybe it was because of the homosexual thing. And when I combine this with William T. Freire von Blumberg, I'm like, well, now you've got two people who were homosexual in the same hotel at the same time. Actually, three, because also Schaefer was. Mm-hmm. But as I take a step further back, well, no, Germany does not want people who are in espionage to come into their country and invade through religion. So now you have to wonder, well, yes, this was about religion to some extent. On the surface, they're preaching Jesus.
Sure.
But it wasn't really the Jesus of the Bible. So you can clearly tell these are men who don't know. I can assure you Branham did not know the Bible. I doubt he ever read it. Why was he preaching it? And you go through all of the lines of men who are in other countries as missionaries. They have really one job, to study the Bible and spread the gospel. But what they're spreading actually isn't the gospel. So you have to wonder, what is this? And like I say, my conspiracy theory mind, I want to go there, but for the sake of religious history, I don't go there.
So, John, it's interesting because I have a quote here from Andrew Womack concerning that idea that maybe this is about something else. Well, he says, revival is not coming through the prayer closet. He said this at the Truth and Liberty Conference. He said, revival is coming through the ballot box. As well, Lance Wallnau once said on one of Womack's Truth and Liberty broadcasts, it's about how to storm the cockpit and take over the plane of a nation. And I think that's what we're talking about. You know, you were mentioning Branham and the idea that he was using religion, you know, but it was really a political movement and money movement. You wonder about this stuff, especially word of faith, prosperity gospel. What you were saying before, Barb, about like the kids having to just sell everything
like
and
labor.
Move up there so that they can, you know, be a part of this man's vision. It's so incredibly sad. And since we've been duped ourselves and been involved in things that we shouldn't have been.
Right.
We want to get the word out there and tell people, no, those little things like where you were just mentioning, John, like you're in it and you're like, something about that doesn't sound right.
Well, and that's,
you know, it's those things, those times that we need to say, wait a minute, I need to move away from this.
That's the thing. One of the things in my travels pre-Kevin, you know, I spent a lot of time in different countries in Asia and across Europe and in Alaska. And it's really interesting to me. What I discovered is interesting that a lot of people that I met that were missionaries, called themselves missionaries in the mission field, instead of what you talked about a couple seconds ago, John, about just reading their Bible and preaching the gospel, what I found was a lot of the people were pushed out of churches in the United States because they couldn't, they didn't agree with the leadership and they wouldn't conform to whatever the doctrine was of that denomination. So they got offended because they weren't allowed to be on leadership in an American church. So they either fled even to Alaska, still America, but and decided to, you know, they're not the best and brightest always of the United States. A lot of them are people that wanted to run stuff, found it to be a really easy, easy thing. You know, and I've told Kevin, you get some sort of special VIP status, it feels like, in a lot of nations just by being from the United States. And so a lot of people have capitalized on that over the last, and I've met so many people that are missionaries overseas that their families are a mess. They don't appear to read the gospel. Their fruit is not good, but they're living in a cheaper kind of culture. So they have these huge houses, or they have, and again, not always, not every, and maybe not even most, but there were enough that over the years, I've kind of talked to other people in global missions of like, okay, how are we training people? And how are we knowing what they're about and what their core belief is? And how are we bringing people back if they're over there? Because the health and well-being of the missionary should be important to the shepherd that sends that missionary out. And if that missionary is just like, you know, independent, I'm just out here and I've started a church, that's a suspicious thing to me. And I just, there's a lot of things that I've seen in global missions for the last 25 almost years that I've gone, hey, wait a second. Like, how come we're not discipling down? How come we're not pulling people out if they are, you know, having problems? You know, I talked to a guy in an Eastern Bloc country, and he was like, I don't even know if I believe the Bible anymore, but he was over there with one of the big missions organizations. And I said, okay, then that's your, you need to come home. Like, first of all, you need to get right with the Lord. And second of all, what are you doing over there if it's not preaching the gospel and you're now questioning the Bible? Like, so, and I think
what you're saying kind of reminds me, John, I read your book on Roy E. Davis as well, and Branham, how back in the day, they would go from town to town, and once they got to the next town, right, they wouldn't know in the former. Anyway, that kind of reminds me of it, because these missionaries or people right. that don't fit in are going elsewhere and spreading something that's just...
Because right. They want to be in charge, and they can't be, because they have to be accountable. And those are just the ones in good places.
It's a religious version of the Music Man, only not nearly so good.
Right?
You know, like I said, I dig into this, and there are things that just make you really scratch your head. I have so many pieces of the puzzle that I could probably put more of it together than I do, but there's a little bit of risk in doing it if it relies to modern terms. The Roy Davis stuff, I can talk about that all day because it's ancient history, but... You look at the formation of the Sharon Orphanage. It was happening at the same exact time Roy Davis was setting up his orphanage. And mm-hmm. you had a congressman from Georgia who was the Department of Americanism, which was a keyword code word for the Klan. As the Klan's being birthed in California, or rebirthed in California. But I came across things like Roy Davis was posing as a federal agent. And you look at the timelines and you really start to question, because the birth of the Latter Rain movement is also the birth of the CIA. I don't know if you guys knew this. The timelines mm-hmm. align fully. And mm-hmm. Davis, who's posing as a federal agent, which is a crime, which he should be convicted of, gets off of it. So you start to wonder, no, wait a minute. If he got away with it, either A, they pardoned him, which they didn't, or B, he really was a federal agent. And you start to wonder, well, how much of this is real, man? How much of it was religion? How much of it was government? How much of it was something else? And sure. you look through the photos yeah. of the Sharon Orphanage, and they've got things like an airplane hangar with airplanes, what does an orphanage need an airplane hangar with airplanes? Mm-hmm. And their part, without the Sharon Orphanage, you don't have the Latter Rain movement and the right. the post-World War II healing revival. Without mm-hmm. that, you don't have charismatics. Without that, you don't have New Apostolic Reformation. So this is right. like the epicenter, and there's so many gray areas that everybody is hiding the past. I want to know why. I don't want to dig too far because they're, like I said, it's a little bit of danger, but just enough to understand that for me, I'm going to take it to the point where I understand, okay, this wasn't religion at all in the first place. They're calling mm-hmm. it religion. And I'm like that close to making that decision anyway. But once I reach that decision, that's the point at which I stop, because you go beyond that and now you're digging into things that are state secrets, and I just won't go there. But I'm looking at it from a critical history lens and also from a doctrinal history lens. And doctrinally speaking, none of the things that are the foundation of this movement make any sense. And if you actually read the Bible and you understand the concepts that are being presented in the Bible in each one of the books that they reference, you're thinking, well, they're not referencing it in the way that that book is saying. So what is this? What are they teaching? What are they preaching? And like I said, I'm just like on the cusp of saying, okay, the whole thing was never supposed to be religion anyway. Religion was a front. And then if you want to go look at the dark side underneath, you can do that, but there's danger there.
And it's interesting. One of the things that was, to me, was like an urban legend when I was at IHOP KC is I heard a number of different people talking about how Paul Kane was CIA because he was on the... They did some supernatural, the government made a special like committee or group of people that were like trained in the supernatural and who knows, but I heard it enough that I always just kind of went, okay, sure.
So I have studied that and have talked to Paul Kane about that.
Okay.
There is a movie which is an awful, awful, stupid, boring movie called Men Who Stare at Goats. And it's got so many famous people that when you look at the list of the lineup of actors, right. and think, that's going to be a good movie. And the movie really stank. I don't even think I finished it. But it's got like George Clooney in there in the CIA operations center where they're literally staring at goats trying to use the power of the mind to influence the goat. And when I first saw it, I thought, this is the stupidest movie ever. Years later, I learned that that was actually a true story. It was not intended to be funny. It was intended to be a historical movie. And I'm scratching my head. Well, you look at this and it is true. Paul Kane was part of this. And I have enough other people who back up his claim and some names I can't mention. I'm sworn to secrecy, but they are aware he was involved with both this and the mob. And I won't go there too far either because there's some danger there, but it doesn't make sense when you see the key players involved. What does make sense is there are things happening that people can use as a vehicle to spread an agenda, and it works both ways. So this whole thing that I'm talking about may not even exist today, but the network exists. And if the network exists and say it's not even in use at all today, well, what about next year? What about if we enter into a new, and it looks like we're entering into a new Cold War. Well, what if we do that? Does that network get reignited? Do we start using that? And for me, I could care less about all of that, but I'm thinking, look at all the kids in that network and Youth with a Mission, which is why I'm starting to go a little bit deeper and try to spread some awareness there, because I would not want my kid involved with that. You should not pay me to let my kid do this. There's no way. There's just too much risk. And further, if you're a Christian and you're seeing that they're teaching things that aren't really aligning with the Bible, why would you want to do it anyway? Why would you want your kid to be indoctrinated in something that is spreading seven mountains nonsense, which is not biblical? So it's a big mess that I think needs to be cleaned up.
Amen to that, John.
I agree with that, John. I think it's interesting, I guess, getting back to Womack a little bit, one of the quotes that he had, and this is why we're talking about this, like, is this a cloak? Is this whole thing a cloak for really a word of faith scheme to make some money? Because some of the things that are coming out of
nationalism,
our nationalism, political, which you know, it houses the Truth and Liberty Coalition. So Womack was quoted saying this, that believers needed to quit focusing on their personal relationship with Christ or simply praying for the nation and begin getting involved, starting with their school board. So forget your relationship with Christ. You know, that's to put that aside, because it's all about politics. Again, he said, we have enough people here in this school. We can actually elect anybody we want. We can take over this place. So you've got to wonder about these things as we're looking at, and we've looked at a lot of ministries lately as well, mainly because we've been involved in them.
Right.
And we've been a part of it in some way, thinking that it was different, and finding out in the end that it was something far different than what we thought.
Right.
So now to try to expose this, so that maybe if people, you know, if they're involved in it, you know, they might not see it, but if you can see some of these negative things, maybe it'll just give you that little tinge, like, hey, I got to look at this. I got to spend some more time looking at this. And this is one of those situations in Woodland Park that we want to just highlight and lift up.
Because it's not Jesus. And that's the whole point. It's not about conspiracies and everybody's scary and everything's dark. And it's not about sensationalism. It's about the Bible. It's about Jesus Christ of the Bible and what he calls us to and how he calls us to live and to act and to serve and to come alongside. And, you know, I think that's the thing, is I've been spending more time again in Ezekiel 34 and what God says about shepherds who, you know, abuse their sheep and get fat on their own flock. But what he says, it's my flock. And I think that's the thing that Kevin and I are trying to figure out here, is like, okay, here's the thing. We've both dealt with a lot of broken hearted, broken faith, individuals in their 20s and early 30s that are being tore up because they're trying to, you know, basically, you know, serve in for no money in some of these situations, because the more tired they are, the hungrier they are, the longer they are in a prayer room, or the longer they're on a mission field, the more they love Jesus. And I'm like, that's not Jesus. That's not the Jesus of the Bible. And increasingly, Kevin and I have, you know, Kevin keeps saying, I don't think this is the same God. This is not the same God of the Bible. And then when you add in all the potential political stuff and you know, promoting all that stuff, that to me just makes sense, as far as like, if it's not really based on God of the Bible and Jesus Christ, then the fruit is going to be very, very lacking and obvious. I mean, Jesus said, we will know a tree by its fruit. A good tree can produce good fruit, and a bad tree can only produce bad fruit. And the fruit of the Spirit is the fruit we're looking at. It's not stockpiling weapons. It's not Americanizing every nation on the planet. It's not getting, you know, a certain party in office. I mean, I find it just fascinating that Jesus never, ever touched the government officials. Never talked about it. Just give to Caesar what is Caesar's, give to me what is mine. But beyond that, any kind of criticism was with the religious leaders of the day. Those were the ones that he was calling out. If we're not of this world and this is not our home, then I'm part of something else. But now, but not in the way of the kingdom now and the dominion now. It's not. And so the nuance, John, the language is so important. Because if you don't talk about the nuance, you lose it, you know.
And one more quote from Andrew Womack, if I could, just because this one's a good one and you'll appreciate it, John. Womack was part of a group of pro-Trump prophets who claimed that Almighty God wants Donald Trump to make America great again, even if a 2024 Trump victory leads to a civil war. Andrew Womack said, but it would be worth it to turn this nation back. I believe it would. So this is the kind of rhetoric that we're dealing with, and I'm sure you've heard it before as you've looked at the latter rain, but yeah, some scary stuff coming out of this community.
It doesn't look like laying down my life and taking up my cross daily.
And that we're citizens
denying
of
another
place, citizens of heaven, ambassadors here.
Loving my neighbor as I love myself. It doesn't look like that. Doesn't look like Jesus.
Well, picture this, and you can see these photographs online of tens to hundreds of thousand people who are coming into these revivals, and they're looking at William Branham was the foremost leader, even recognized by historians as the leader of the revival movement. He would come and he would preach and he would teach, and after teaching, he would was invited into the churches by many of the ministries who were in those meetings of hundreds of thousands of people, mm-hmm. which sparked the whole revival and basically laid the groundwork for everything that we see today in this movement. And he's coming out onto the platform and he's saying things like this. As a Bible teacher, he's saying things like this. I don't know the Bible real well, but I know the author. Now, what person who's looking for a Bible teacher to come in their church would listen to something like this and say, that's the guy that I want to come teach our church Bible doctrine. You have to understand that it's not a Christian movement that's based on the Bible. It's a Christian movement that's named off of the word Christian. There is a difference. It can be Christian and based off the Bible, or it can be Christian and we're just calling it this. I drive a Ford SUV. I could say, well, that's a Porsche SUV. And everybody riding with me could say, it is not, it's a Ford. And I don't do that because it's a lie. I'm not going to do that. But that's essentially what these guys were doing. They were taking the word Christian, the name Jesus, they were branding it differently, totally different religion. And that's why you see mysticism and all of these other things. It's just not based on the Bible. But thank you so much for doing this. There's so much more, actually, I want to talk about. Maybe we could come back and talk about more later in the future.
Okay. Sounds good.
Sounds good.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, John.
Awesome. Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org and Pellegrino Walk YouTube channel. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.